Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
Leagues Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning Leagues Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting three matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the Crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. Leagues Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.
Stop it. Matty, please.
Welcome back to, what did we call this again? What was this place called?
The Vroom Room.
No, that's the Vroom Room. This is the...
Vroom Room 2.0?
Something like that.
I mean, it is better.
Broom Room. It was the Broom Room.
Oh, yeah, because there was a broom in the corner. Room.
Yeah. We're back again, and we've upgraded. We've got headphones now, which... It's quite fun because Jess doesn't like hearing her own voice. There's going to be a challenge throughout this podcast to make Jess's back spasm because that's what happens, right?
I have a bad reaction to anything. What is it?
To hearing your own voice?
No, what's
ASMR?
ASMR, yeah. It sets me off.
Today is an Ask Us Anything podcast where we put out on Instagram, on social media, you know, any questions for us guys? You know, our upbringing, that's a bit weird. Yeah, we know what I mean. You know, our past, you know, and what we've been up to, and the future, the present, the past, the standard, whatever.
Time.
Today.
Alternative
Yay.
Timeline.
Yes, the timeline. And I think if we're going to be starting with the WTF1 timeline, it begins with the birth. You had to go through labour, didn't you, Tommy, to create this child?
Yeah, it was a 9-month period where...
I think you say you were 9 months in labour.
That too. I guess if you want to know the start, I started it in 2010. I think a lot of people, probably a lot of our YouTube audience as well, maybe only think it started when we started in 2017, was it?
With the YouTube channel? Yeah. A lot of people do think that.
So...
No, another 7 years.
7 years I was plugging away with it on my own.
And let's give Nikola.Yordanov.5283. So... a specific question on it. How did everything start and whose idea is the creation of this show?
Show.
More like, you know, worldwide sensation, I'd say, but it's fine, whatever.
This whole thing, well, yes, it was my idea as Matt always...
As I always call you, the founder.
The founder,
right?
Yeah. So I founded...
God, that sounds great with headphones on. Sorry, carry on.
I founded WTF1 in 2010. It started off as a Tumblr page. And should probably address, because I saw a few questions that a lot of people ask, are you F1 fans or how big of an F1 fan are you and stuff like that?
No, we hate it. Absolutely hate it. Can't stand it. Prefer hockey.
You know, yeah. But yes, I started it because I was a huge F1 fan and realistically nothing more than that. I didn't start it because I thought, yes, this is a great business venture to no longer have...
Well, back then you couldn't make money from memes, could you? Like, it's not like a...
Well, even in the early days when... I think a lot of people have this perception online that when you've got like 20, even just like 20,000 followers, everyone thinks you're like a millionaire.
No.
And the reality was making £3 Google ad money a day.
The struggle.
Yeah, the struggle is real. The reason I set it up was because there were no... F1 sites that I thought did what we do now in terms of bring personality into it. I was a big fan of other websites. I used to love this site called Geekology, which was just like a tech website,
right, okay.
And stuff. But I loved the way the guy wrote all these articles, and it was really tongue in cheek, and it was just a funny blog, I guess. So
you heard of Geekology, Jess? Is that
no, never.
No, it sounds scary. I don't even want to visit it. I feel like I would be just blasted with information.
It's kind of just like silly viral videos and random tech
things. Is it still going to this day?
I think so. It's not as big. We're bigger than it now, which is quite cool. So,
but so were you aware of? Because obviously, in today's day and age with social media, there's so many ways to for anybody to start making content. But back then, I guess it was less of a thing. So what made you want to start, say, a Tumblr page or start blogging about it? Like, were you aware? Obviously, you said you were aware of Geekology, but were they similar to you? Were they just like an individual or was it part of a media company? What kind of, what was the
Yeah, it was just, process? So I just did it. I was at university at the time and I was just like, well, I basically really wanted an F1 site like this Geekology page, and I was like, if someone made that, I wish someone would make this site because I'd read it and love it. And so I just made a Tumblr because it was one of the it was a site that I could easily kind of customize without any web design knowledge or anything like that, which obviously in the early days I had no. Because I was doing everything with help from Katie, my wife. We were trying to do, obviously, all that is like logos, hosting, all this kind of stuff that we were just kind of making up as we went along. So there were some funny moments in the early days. One of which was because as the site was inevitably getting bigger, I didn't know anything about hosting and all that kind of stuff, and the site kept getting hacked. And,
really?
And I was just like, well, I don't know what to do. And this guy was helping me, so I used to have to just message him when it broke and be like, help. And one day, it wasn't a race weekend or anything, but I was just like, checked the site, and the site was just porn. Just the homepage was just some guy going to town on this person, and I was like, okay, so that's WTF1 now. So I had to message my friend Adam, who was doing my hosting, and be like, check the site. How do we get it back to the F1
stuff? How do we get rid of this?
Yeah.
Wow.
So it was tricky, and it was a lot of sleepless nights, and I worked my arse off on it, realistically, and for very little reward at the start.
I was going to say, was there ever points where you almost like threw it all in and didn't want to do it anymore?
Yeah, quite a few times, to be honest. Maybe within the first couple of years, because I was at uni, when I got to third year, it was pretty full on trying to do it whilst doing a university course. Someone messaged, a couple of people messaged when I hadn't put anything on for like 5 or 6 days and were like, what's happened? Are you still doing it or whatever? So I kind of thought, oh, people like it, and carried it on. And then inevitably it just kind of grew and grew from there.
Was there ever a eureka moment for you when you thought, okay, this is really potentially going to be something huge?
So when I was at uni, I did music at uni, by the way, not anything related to what I'm doing now.
What part of music? Like just
Music technology. So okay. It was like sound design and all this kind of stuff. When I was in final year, it was kind of the point where everyone goes out and gets work experience and opportunities. Everyone was doing the same degree as me. So essentially you had to have one standout factor, I guess. I wasn't getting anything, and all my kind of opportunities and stuff was coming through WTF1. So I got to go to Sky when they launched the Sky Sports thing, which was at the time really cool because I was part-time working at working a part-time job and at uni, and it was like, oh, do you want to go to Sky Sports and meet Damon Hill, who was like my idol? It's like, yes, I do. And then things happened from there. Like I had a job interview with Red Bull and I got to the final stage of that. And it was like, okay, this is the direction clearly that
so it just is naturally
the way to go.
Took,
and it just naturally took me there. Yeah. So.
So where did the name WTF1, where did you get the name WTF1 says Victor Chu?
Everyone loves that, don't they?
Shall we just clarify first what WTF1 stands
for? So it's who's the fastest one? But I mean, realistically, it's just a funny name. I was like, WTF1, that's funny.
Yeah.
And yeah, people, very, very early on, people were like, what's WTF1 stand for? Like, every comment, like, on any post would be like, what is WTF1? Like, people are so obsessed with the
name. We say who's the fastest one, but yeah. It's a play, obviously, it is, on
exactly.
other terms.
It's just...
And it sticks in your head, which is great. Yeah. Great branding from you. Well done.
Good work,
well done. Yeah, well done, I did a master's in branding. No, I didn't.
So who was the first person or company or whatever to reach out to you in a kind of more professional format to kind of almost offer you work? Or because I guess that's the point where it stops becoming something you do as a hobby and then turns into something where you can maybe turn it into a career.
Yeah, so I was after uni, so I didn't get that job at Red Bull, which was quite disheartening because that would have jumped straight into that. And even more disheartening was I ended up just working in retail for like half a year or something.
What shop?
TK Maxx.
Okay, cool.
Yeah, so I was working at TK Maxx like part-time and also getting like crazy opportunities to kind of do like go to Sky and do these kind of things, which was cool. And then Red Bull contacted me again and said, you know, I've been passed over your details, I'd like you to work for us. So I started freelancing for them. And then that allowed me to go full-time freelance. So I was working a lot for Red Bull. Doing
which is how you got verified.
Doing their
doing
their website and stuff, and social media and all that, and then because I had that free time and I wasn't doing a normal job, that's where I could put a lot more effort into WTF1, and then inevitably it grew a lot more because I could. I mean, when it started, it was like one post a day, if that, because it was a lot to manage.
Yeah.
And that's when it went. I think we had like 20,000 Facebook likes or whatever, yeah. And then I think it got to like 100,000 quite quickly when I was just doing it, you know, more effort, put more effort into it, more time. So,
Well, any more funny stories? Because you mentioned there was a few that I didn't know or Jess didn't know that came from the early days.
Yeah, I mean, it was mainly just like a lot of.
A lot of porn
screw
hacking.
Ups, porn hacking. There was one point where we're trying to move over the new stuff, and I somehow managed to delete every article I'd ever done on WTF1, all the pictures, all the formatting. And thank God this guy got it back for me because.
How did you manage that?
I basically we're moving over stuff, and then after it was hacked or something, I think I needed to back it up and then delete everything. And my brain went, delete everything.
And then
I can't remember. Yeah, I can't remember how, but I remember just going, where is everything?
Oh, and yeah. God. I bet that was a time where you went, oh no.
There was a lot of like moments, yeah, where I was just like very ragey and like, why am I doing this? And fair play to like Katie as well, my wife, who probably was like, could quite easily have been like, why are you doing this?
Mm.
Because... like you say, you'd stay up till midnight doing stuff or whatever with a part-time job, and then you're like, oh, I made £1.50 of Google ads today. Yay!
Did anyone ever tell you were mad and that this was never going to be, like, get a proper job, essentially?
Not really. I think at first when I did, like, the Red Bull thing, I think, obviously, like, family were a bit like, oh, so you're doing what? You're just like writing about F1 and without really knowing much. But obviously, I don't think there's too many moments where it was like, what are you doing? I think a lot of my uni friends as well was just like, oh my God, that's so cool. Because they knew I was like massively obsessed with F1, and a lot of school friends as well. Like, so you might remember Jason, who was on the podcast. Obviously, like that was crazy to be like working with him and stuff on this, because I was at school like, one of the only people that liked F1, and now, you know, people were hearing about me going to speak to Damon Hill or go to a car launch or something like that. So yeah, it was cool. And then yeah, I the first race I went to as media was Austria in 2014 when they first launched it, and that was really cool and a bit like daunting, because obviously being the fan that was just like being essentially the nerd at like Silverstone waving flags and stuff, and then being in the paddock like, oh my god,
yeah, which you still get to this day.
Yeah, it's still obviously, yeah, it still happens, but yeah, actually one of the first people I spoke to in the paddock was Ted Kravitz, and I saw him there, and very very early on we used to sell a Ted Kravitz Appreciation Society t-shirt that Katie had made, because Katie absolutely like loved Ted, and
loved, past tense,
love, yeah,
were they together?
He's hilarious, isn't he? But so I saw him and was like, oh, just wanted to say hello, thinking that he'd just be like, who the fuck are you?
Yeah.
And I basically said, oh, just wanted to say, like, my wife made those t-shirts, the Ted Kravitz t-shirts, and she was like, oh, so do you know WTF1? I was like, oh,
I am WTF1.
And then we started chatting, and he was like, yeah, he was awesome. He was like, oh, like, I hope you get on all right, because he knew it was my first race. And I was like, if you have any questions, let me know. And he said that he'd bought the Ted Kravitz Appreciation Society shirts for his daughters and stuff. Like, he had two like 3-year-old daughters or whatever.
Yes.
And I was just like, what a legend. Because obviously, like, it's really daunting, and you're just like, what if all these people that are lovely on telly just be like, who are you?
Yeah. You don't know how they'll be off camera,
exactly.
Do you? And that's quite funny, because I didn't really know about that story when I met Ted at F1 Live London in 2017. And because I obviously saw him, I was like, oh, cool, that's Ted. And he came up to me and was like, are you Matt Gallagher? And I was like, hey.
This is the wrong way around.
No, I was about to come and say, hello, Ted. And he's like, yeah. And then he mentioned that he'd met you and stuff, and he loves WTF1. I was just like, that's so weird. Like, that's the weirdest part, is when people that you like look up to or you see on television have noticed and seen what you're doing. And
yeah.
I bet for you in particular, like, how the fact you've had blood, sweat and tears put into this, and then someone like Ted going, yeah, no, I bought those t-shirts. You're like, huh?
Speaking of blood, sweat and tears as well, because obviously now WTF1 is a part of Car Throttle. So yeah. 2016 came around and... Car Throttle acquired WTF1 from you.
Yeah.
Was that a difficult process to go through, kind of relinquishing your baby to somebody else?
It wasn't easy. It was that, yeah, I had a lot of, obviously we had a few conversations. It's been well known that I'd met Adnan, who's CEO of Car Throttle, back in 2013, 2014, something like, not long after I'd started this job with Red Bull. So we had these talks before, and I was like, it's not really the time for me. I'm just, you know, starting this job with Red Bull, and I feel like things are going really well, so don't really want to move to London. I was happy. I was living in Leeds, and I was like,
living
the life in Leeds.
Leeds.
Yeah, really enjoying it. So, and then, yeah, when it came to 2016, we had another chat, and it felt like it was the right time to do it. I felt like it wasn't, maybe I'd taken it as far as I could on my own as well. And also, weirdly, like, it's always the same with things, I think we've spoken about it before, but when I was growing up, obviously I would never have imagined that I could have ever got bored writing for like Red Bull or someone, but it did get a bit, you know, static or whatever, samey, and I was just like, it'd be nice to start something new. I was doing a few other freelance projects as well. The weirdest thing, actually, and I'm not one for like fate or anything, but I was working with Mark Webber, and obviously, as you do.
So
I worked with him for a little bit in the WC, and the person I was working with, who was his PR person when in F1, I remember ringing her, and I really loved this job, and I really liked working with her, and I kind of almost felt a little bit bad. I was like, I'm really sorry, but like, I'm leaving. I've had this opportunity, blah blah blah. And she was like, oh well, everything happens for a reason, all this kind of stuff. And she's a little bit, she was like, oh, I'm really happy for you and all this stuff. But she kept going on about all this like stuff, and I was like, okay. And then the day after, Mark Webber announced he was retiring from motorsport, and it was like, that's weird.
So your the job that you had that you love was going to naturally come to an end anyway,
and all this kind of stuff.
Oh,
so
amazing.
It's like, wow,
that worked out well.
And then yeah, the whole car throttle thing happened, and it obviously, and now we're here.
And now we're here. And now.
Now we're in the cupboard.
And yeah. Then next to come along was Mr. Matthew
Gallagher. Child, me. Before we get on to me, just one last question on you, Tommy, from My Hawk Falconorge. Why does Tommy look like he's only 18? Because, I mean, considering how much you've put into this project, how do you not look 50?
I know. I don't know. Maybe stress de-ages me. I don't know.
I think that's definitely the opposite for most other people in the world.
Everybody. That's different.
Every comment, like in the early days of the podcast, was like, the kid with glasses. It's like, I'm 30 next year.
30 years old. 30.
Look at this face. 30 years.
You make me sick.
Still get ID'd for everything, don't you?
So a Jehovah's Witness came to the door last week. And in the middle of the day. And I answered and he went, are your mum and dad in?
No. No way.
Oh, yes.
That's even got Rory laughing behind the camera.
And I rolled with it because I was like, this means they're going to go away if I say no.
Wow.
And he was even really patronizing. He was like, oh, so you're in charge of the house today and stuff. I was
no. Like, he full on like.
Yeah, full on thought I was like 12. Yeah, yeah.
I should have showed him your wedding ring. Like,
Or like really played it up and been like, yeah, I'm in a like arranged marriage or something. I got married off when I was 12. Like really play it up, see what you said.
It's holding a sign like, help me.
Yeah.
It's not the worst problem to have, is it?
Could be worse.
You'll still look 20 when you're 70, so that's great. Everyone else just gets really, really old. And then I arrived on the scene. Kids Love F1 asks, how did Matt get hired by WTF1? That's kind of more of a question, I guess, to you, Tommy. How did you find me?
I found it.
How did you find this?
So when we were looking for the YouTube channel,
and this was a secret project, wasn't
this
it?
This was a secret project because I messaged you on Twitter, and this was still a lot of people didn't know what you were doing, because you had to say like, oh, I've got this news.
Yeah, when I'd got the job, yeah.
And obviously we couldn't say anything about the car throttle acquisition for a while, so there was like a 4 or 5 month period where we were just sort of, you're right.
Just smacking the mic stand. And
sort of hiring people and sorting things while also being like, do you want to join this project? I can't tell you anything about it, but...
That was weird. That was the first...
I messaged you, didn't I, on... Twitter or something, I think, saying like, can you come in for an interview?
Why Matty though?
So
I'm gonna try and find that DM whilst you talk. Go on.
Yeah, it will still be there probably. We were looking through different YouTubers and presenters and stuff, and naturally a bit like really early on, and how I said about F1 sites and motorsport sites being quite very news and, how do I say boring without saying boring, but yeah, like very straight laced and all that kind of stuff. We were Gabs, Adnan, Katie was helping as well, like looking through all these YouTubers and stuff, and we saw Matt, like all these presenters, and then we played the video with Matt, and I think Alex from Car Throttle was in the meeting as well, and we watched the video of you when Nico Rosberg had just been announced as retiring. Great and video. You sort of shouting around your kitchen. Yeah. And obviously we're just like, this is WTF1 here. And there you go. You shouting about Nico Rosberg around your kitchen got you a job.
It's quite a funny story really, because I remember, I think I was just at home just chilling, and then I just saw on BBC or whatever Nico Rosberg retires, and I kid you not, I ran downstairs with my little, what was it, the what's that camera, the little one?
G7X
one, yeah, that's it. And I ran downstairs with my camera, plonked it on the bookshelf, and I was like, ah, 5 minutes of that, ran back upstairs, uploaded it, literally hardly any editing or anything like that. I was just like, I need to get this out now. And it went reasonably big, and obviously you guys saw it and whatnot. And yeah, it's just, it's weird to think that out of all those videos I used to do on my old channel, that was the one that you were like, yeah, that's, you know, Matt's WTF1, because, you know, that was probably not the best content I've ever made. But I guess you kind of saw the kind of personality that...
Yeah, saw the personality and how it would, you know, it would be molded. Obviously, we took a while to find what we were doing. Like, your first shoot was that... I know this triggers you so much, for that Lotus shoot where it was like, okay, so we don't really know what we're doing with the YouTube channel. We're just doing it about F1. I know you spend your time raging about Nico Rosberg and playing video games, but can you stand with the son of Colin Chapman and talk about Lotus cars? And you were like very nervous. And
I think the one thing I remember from that shoot, and it's amazing looking back on like our first videos to now, but you didn't know, even know where to put your hands.
No,
I think that was the biggest thing, where you were just like,
goodness me. Like, that whole shoot was petrifying. Cause I mean, just to take it back. So obviously Tommy messaged me, you didn't do it in DMs. I don't know. You may have emailed. I think you emailed me.
All right.
But then I remember sending you the DM after our first meeting, okay, of like talking about, you know, this opportunity, but I didn't really know what the opportunity was. But like, yeah, but we're going to do something. I was like, great. Or what? We're going to do something, which, you know, about Formula One. And then I was like, great to meet you guys earlier. Nice to meet people of a similar mindset. Then the arm emoji. I was like, looking back, I'm like, you're such a keno. And then obviously Tommy was like, yeah, thanks for coming in. It was good to meet you. And I remember just sitting on the train going, does that mean they like me? Does that mean they don't like me? I was just like, look at, like, analysing it, thinking, because, you know, when you spoke to me about it, I didn't know the ins and outs of it, but I knew that, geez, this is an opportunity that I can't miss. And then I remember you messaging me going, hey, mate, how's it going? Loving the streams you've been doing recently. Thought it'd be easy to chat here, then email. Need to sort out a few things if possible. No major rush. I was like, what things? What things do you need to sort with?
And
what,
can you tell panicking. Me the timestamp of that?
So that was at 2:39. And I was like, okay, I think I've left it long enough. And I went, hello, mate. Far away. I'm all good, thanks, pal, yourself. And that was at 2:40. So that was 1 minute. I was just sitting there going, okay, all right, how long do I leave this? Nah, fuck it. Yeah.
But at that point, so you were full-time YouTubing? Or?
Yeah, so at that point I was, yeah. So I, before this, I used to work with young people for, oh God, three and a half years. I used to work in schools, kind of doing a sort of a counselling type job where, you know, I'd speak to them about issues and, you know, school options and whatnot. And I did YouTube on the side, just playing F1 games, shouting, raging, just, you know, no cares in the world. It was literally just a, this is fun, I'm going to do it whilst I've got my full-time job. So, you know, it was great. But then it started to pick up and I was like, okay, all right, decent amount of subscribers and, you know, make a bit of money and like, okay, where's this going? And then I, the job that I had with young people came to an end because of public funding and whatnot. So then I was like, okay, let's try this YouTube thing for a few months whilst I look for something else. And then obviously that's when you messaged me and whatnot about the whole WTF1 thing. So it kind of came at a good time. I mean, I was kind of enjoying what I was doing. I was you know, streaming on Twitch, doing YouTube as well. So it was good, but I kind of needed something a bit more to push me out there. And then obviously we had the test shoot, which you mentioned, which, yeah, was the most petrifying day of my life. Because obviously I knew all the details then about, you know, YouTube presenter, blah, blah, blah. I was like, oh my God, a presenter? Oh my God, all I do is shout at games.
Yeah.
And yeah, and as you said about my hands, I just remember, yeah, can you speak to like Clive Chapman? I was like, cool, I know nothing about this man. I know not much about the Lotus 49, but hey, let's interview him. And I just remember standing there, I was like, where do I put my hands? I was just kind of down by my side. Do I do anything with them? And obviously looking back at it, if people were to look back at that video, it's quite the difference to now, which is great. I'm glad I've improved somewhere. So it's nice to look back because you don't really kind of see how much you come on and unless you've actually got it there in front of you. And yeah, that shoot was scary, but I'm, you know, glad that there was some potential that came through. Otherwise I probably would have been very devastated, but it was quite the journey. Obviously we're here now, so
so going back to the beginning, what made you start uploading videos to YouTube or streaming on Twitch? Like what was the kind of trigger point for you?
I was, as Tommy is the same, it was kind of like a, I'm a massive Formula One fan. I loved playing the game at the time. I loved like competitive league racing back when esports didn't exist. It was all very much all for fun. And I was just sat there and I was like, I'd like, you know, some people started to upload on YouTube. I was like, oh, this is quite cool. Because I wanted to show people how good I was at the game. It was all an ego trip, really. I was like, I just want to upload and show people that I can do fast lap times. And then it kind of just went from there. And, you know, it kind of just coincided with the fact that I loved Formula One. And then I was like, oh, actually, I like talking into a microphone as well. And then I started putting voice over. I mean, oh my God, some of my early videos are the worst things you'll ever see.
I think my favorite one is, what's the Grosjean one?
Oh, the Grosjean song.
Oh my goodness,
yeah.
Me, the Romain Grosjean parody song of Lewis Turned Into Me.
That's it.
So that's
you and your mate with a Romain Grosjean mask on singing
the Backstreet Boys. I want it that way, yeah. in the style of Lewis Turned Into Me. So yeah, literally just sat down, changed all the lyrics, and then my friend Jody, you know, he was like, yeah, I can film the music video if you. I was like, this is going to be dreadful, but yeah, sure, because I don't know what I'm going to do with it. And then he made a Romain Grosjean mask, sat in his bedroom, and just started like, it is one of the worst videos ever. But people still to this day message me about it. Oh, Lewis Turned Into Me. Oh, has anyone seen this? Oh, old school X-Mate G and stuff. And it's crazy to look back on, because that was all just for innocent fun. I never thought I'd get more than 10 views. Yeah, I just remember the first time when I first launched my channel, and obviously no subscribers, no one knew who I was. And I was on forum after forum after forum, just copying, pasting. Oh, have anyone seen my hot lap around America? Just really geeky. But, you know, I was just like, okay, oh my God, I've got 10 views. 10 people have seen me. Yeah. You know, oh, I've got 100 subscribers. I remember thinking, oh my, 100 people? I could fill a room with this.
You know? I was used to imagine like how many people,
yeah,
like check the size of stadiums and be like, oh my God, I could fill out Wembley with the yeah, people that are here.
Not quite Wembley yet. Yeah. I was 100 subscribers. But yeah, I could fill a small kitchen with this, you know?
And a small kitchen?
Yeah, maybe not 100, maybe 10. But yeah, it was just crazy to kind of see. And it's weird that how your expectations change with it, especially with both WTF1 and my old channel. It's kind of like, you know, you see what, get to a milestone, then you're like, okay, I want to get to the next milestone now. And it kind of just constantly pushes you to keep going. And yeah, it's weird that, because then YouTube then became quite monetizable, and then you had like companies coming to you and being like, okay, we want to partner with your channel. And then I'm sat there going, I don't have a clue if this is a good or bad deal. There's a massive contract with 100 pages. Do I read all this? Do I just sign? You know, and it's those kind of things that you're not used to at all, and it just throws you in. So it was, well, without it, I wouldn't be here. So I have a lot to owe to me snapping discs and throwing it out my window and all that good stuff. And a lot of people say, you know, where's the Matty rage gone? And, you know, I think a lot of people don't maybe understand that these two ventures are very different. You know, X-Matty G was very much I just upload whatever the hell I want. There's no repercussions. It's just me. Whereas obviously this is a much more professional outlet. There is still fun. We still have a lot of fun, but there's time and places for rage, and we do have rage, but not in the way of, you know, calling people certain words. So yeah, it's been a ride. I can't believe it's been 2 years now since the YouTube channel pretty much launched. So
yeah, well, I mean, we were Autosport doing a video the other day, and yeah, that was where the famous Clive Chapman video was shot. So
people need to go and watch that, and just let us know what you think, because it was fun.
Get that video to 100k.
Right, moving on from me. Formula fangirl has a question for all three of us. What made each of you want to do this as a profession? I think we probably both covered that. But there's one person that hasn't just yet. So
yeah.
Jess, it's probably a good time for you to go. And how did you get the foot in your get your foot in the door? Something's happened to me recently in the motorsport world, so I'm interested to hear what happened to all of you. Well, congratulations, Formula Fangirl, for whatever news that is. But
yeah,
how did you get your foot in the door?
That's awesome.
Jess?
Obviously, like, my story is way different from either of yours.
Are you telling me you didn't play games and throw things out the window?
No? I did, but just not in public or on YouTube.
Okay.
I didn't film it. Yeah, I kept that private.
Oh, well,
I still do that to this day, but just no one sees it. But yeah, I guess I've got maybe more of a boring way of getting here. Like, I'm not...
Okay, cool. Moving on.
Exactly. No, to be honest, might as well. I'd always been a Formula One fan my whole life, kind of like you guys and probably most of the people watching or listening now. And it never occurred to me that I could get a job here. I always thought, like, wouldn't it be cool if I could do something in F1? But I didn't know what I was good at yet. or kind of what my expertise could be. Whereas I guess like you guys loved creating content, making things, uploading, whereas I was always a bit more like, well, people probably don't want to hear the fact that I sound like Hermione Granger and, you know, is it really a place for me? Like that side of things never really appealed to me. I was more kind of business orientated, always thought I was going to run my own business at some point. And I went to uni and I did English Lit because that's what most people do when they don't know what they want to do with their lives.
Yes.
And massively enjoyed it, had an amazing time, and then kind of got to my final year and went, I should probably get a job. So one of our family friends, Ravers, he worked previously at a media company called Haymarket that owned Autosport. And it was one of those things where media had always fascinated me. You know, I always thought maybe I'd go into advertising and make TV commercials and stuff, because I always found that the kind of the psychology behind it and the creativity behind it really interesting. I remember when I was a kid, I used to, this is really geeky, but I used to like imagine TV commercials in my head as I was like walking around, like just cause. And I loved like, what's that film with Mel Gibson? Where he can hear women's thoughts.
I know what you mean.
I can't remember what that one was it called. It's a proper classic 90s film. Anyway, so that's all about an advertising agency, and I love that film and, and stuff, which is really geeky. But so anyway,
what women want.
That's
I literally
it.
Typed in Mel Gibson movie, and someone had literally written Mel Gibson movie where he hears women's thoughts. So there you go. Exactly
what women
did
want.
You search this earlier?
No, I didn't. I should have done though.
There you go.
So anyway, there were Haymarket do a lot of graduate jobs, kind of in media sales, and I didn't really know what media sales meant, but I knew it was kind of get my foot in the door in media, and maybe it could lead to something else. So I went and applied, and there was a role going at Autosport. So I was like, oh my God, maybe I can work in motorsport like straight away, straight out of uni. Wouldn't that be amazing? And I was actually there with someone who now is one of my best friends. We went to the same like induction day, and it was all very like, you know, like it was like some kind of FBI training thing. It wasn't really, but it was like everyone in a room, and they kind of tested you, and then halfway through the day they pull people out, and then you never saw them again. And it was kind of intense.
Wow.
And anyway, myself and Katie, shout out to Katie Snowball, we were the last two candidates remaining, and there was one job on Autosport and one job on another title called Management Today. And we both got to the final interview, and then we got each got phone calls kind of like the next day or something like that. And they called me up and they were like, we'd like to offer you a job. And I was like, oh my God, I'm so excited. And they were like, yeah, it's on Management Today. And I was like, okay. But I still took it because I thought, you never know, maybe I can get on Autosport at some point, which did actually end up happening. So I worked on Management Today for a couple of years, and I was selling advertisement, so selling space in the back of a magazine, and then moved on to selling kind of website banners and stuff. So all the stuff that everybody loves whenever they click onto a website, that was me. And then a job at Autosport came up, and I moved onto that and loved it because it meant I could talk about F1 all day, every day, and that was my job. And I kind of, whilst I was there, it was becoming apparent that social media was really taking off. And I was like, we're not doing enough in this space. Like, there's so much more we could be doing social media-wise. And then that made me kind of look at F1 in general, and obviously Bernie Eccleston didn't believe in social media. He thought it was a phase, and it might well be a phase, but it's been a long old phase.
Yeah, and it's very big.
And it's massive. So I was like, look, there's got to be more stuff that we can be doing around this. And for one reason or another, it wasn't really on Haymarket's agenda to go down that route. And so I was starting to get really frustrated because it was such a massive opportunity and we weren't capitalizing on it. And then I got a recruiter contacted me and said, there's a job at Car Throttle going, which is all about social media. It's all about like young millennials, and they've got a sales job going. Do you want it? And I was like, yeah, that sounds awesome. And as much as it was a step away from F1, I kind of thought, you know, I need to move there, because this was before Car Throttle had bought WTF1. So I had no idea that was going on. And so I moved across, I made the leap and joined Car Throttle, and it was a completely different world. It was talking about social media, using social media day in, day out, which was amazing. And then not long after I joined, Adnan was like, have you heard of WTF1? And I was like, I've literally been following this since 2011. Like, it's the best thing on the internet. And proper fangirled about it for
ages. How long were you at Carl Throttle for before I joined?
So I joined in January and you kind of came on board October.
Yeah.
So I had to wait less than a year until motorsport came back into my life.
Just counting down the days.
But it's so much like that Mark Webber's PR woman is right. Like, I really believe everything happens for a reason. And it's not a case of like you sit back and let fate take the wheel. Like, you do have to make decisions, but it's amazing. Like, if you do make decisions that even might seem tough at the time, it usually leads you down towards at least what you're going for. And yeah, it might take risk. It might seem like the worst idea in the world at that point, but it's amazing what you can make out of those opportunities. So anyway, got told that we were buying WTF1. And I remember Tommy's first day when you came into the office. I think I almost jumped on you. Like, not in a sexual way. Sexual way.
How did your wife take that?
Oh, yeah, we should probably address the comment that was like,
we're not
are
married.
You married? And no. Gabs, our COO, was like, yes. And it's like, no, we're not.
We're not married. You're married to a very wonderful woman called Katie,
yes.
Who, as you heard in previous stories, was pretty instrumental in WTF1 coming into being. So thank you, Katie.
Thank Katie.
Shout out to Katie.
Shout out to the wife.
Here's your shout out.
But yeah, I remember it was myself and George who used to work for us, and we basically like pinned you into a corner.
I remember that day because George, who was a developer, right?
Yeah, he was our CTO.
Yeah. He was, again, like massive WTF1 fan, and he, in the early days, he was helping me fix all the spam and porn and Russian hacking and everything that was like wrong with WTF1. And I remember coming in that first day and I was like, oh, thanks very much. I think I had a WTF1 t-shirt or something. And then you were there as well and you were like, oh, I'm such a big fan of WTF1. And I was there like giving George this t-shirt and I was like, oh, I should have got one for you if I'd known.
I think you managed to find a Maldonado.
I got some stickers.
Sticker. So I was like, and you gave me a pin badge, and I was like, this is literally the coolest thing ever. And I remember telling my friends, because there was a bunch of us who would always, we had like a text group or WhatsApp group that we would talk about F1 stuff in, and we would always share like WTF1 stuff in there and be like, this is hilarious. And so when I told them that I'd met the founder, I think I took a selfie and like put it in there, and they were like, oh my God, is that Tom Bellingham? It was like you were a celebrity. It was amazing.
The weirdest thing there, and it's still the same now, but yeah, especially even then, like going to that first day when everyone was so excited, like because I was kind of the nerd behind it and almost like couldn't detach from this little bubble, that was so weird for me that anyone would ever even care that much about it. Like you see the figures and stuff, but until you meet people and they talk to you about it, I'm sure you're the same, like you're just like, oh wow, this means something to people.
It's very weird. I'm exactly the same when it comes to just looking at numbers on the screen. Obviously, you know, you look at statistics, you want to hit this, that and the other, but then you go to an event like Autosport, which we did recently, or you know, any kind of Formula One motorsport event, you know, and people come up to you and you know, they want a picture, and then you feel them like shaking, and you're like, "Please, come on!" It's so weird.
Because you still look at yourself as just a normal person.
I'm just an F1 fan that talks crap into
When we got back from that day at Autosport, you know the Facebook thing that tells you blah 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 how many years ago or whatever.
Yeah.
And it was like 8 years ago, and it was a picture of me at Autosport next to David Coulthard, probably shaking like a picture of me with him, and it's like it's crazy how like since then, it's mad. It's just absolutely mad.
I've got a funny story actually. Only 2-3 days ago, not even that, 2 days ago, my sister called me. She's, you know, she's a fan of what I do and what WTF1 does and whatnot. And apparently she was on a bus because she's just moved to Oxford University, Oxford Brookes, not Oxford. She's not that clever.
But
joking,
your poor sister.
Love you, G. And she heard some people on the bus talking about Schumacher, and she knows that I love Schumacher. That's the only thing she probably does know about me in Formula One. But I think she had had a few drinks, and she'd mentioned, you know, my brother works in Formula One, and you know, he's from WTF1. Apparently, they all just lost their minds.
No
they
way.
Were like, "Oh my God, blah, blah, blah. You know, Georgina was telling me. Then she rang me and I was like, hello? And she was like, yeah. Oh my God, there's these guys on the bus that love WTF1. Apparently one of them can't even breathe. Can you speak to them? And I was like, bit weird, but sure, okay. And then they passed them over like, Matt, oh my God, this can't be real. You know, and I'm just sat there just, I think I'm in my like blooming boxers just like, hi. Yeah, how are you?
I was going to say, do you have a catchphrase? I can't. Do you really? I guess there's not really anything like. Really, hi, I'm Matt. We're just, WTF1.
We're out.
You should have just said. You should have said that to them and see if their like, minds were blown.
It was just so weird. I can hardly breathe. Oh my God, I love WTF1. One of them messaged me at 3:55 in the morning after a great night out, clearly, and then something like this essay of like how much he loves WTF1.
Aww.
And things like that. I'm just kind of obviously I'm so appreciative. It just blows my mind that people get so worked up over what we do. And you know, like Internet's Best Reactions is obviously a huge series that people mention quite a lot, and it just like for you, obviously, with the, you know, you actually created the whole thing, and it's like the YouTube side as well, the fact that people are so invested in what we do is insane.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I think without skipping too far ahead, because that'll probably come up later, but yeah, I remember when we went to Baku, and that was, what has it been, like a year since we kind of started the YouTube properly. And I remember just walking around and like people were like saying hello to like me, you and Ali and stuff. And like, I remember like Ali got like someone asked for a photo with him and we were just like, oh my God, this is crazy. And then we were doing the grid walk and someone just shouted my name and I was like, oh, you're right. And he's like, yeah, can I have your autograph? And I don't have an autograph. And yeah, I was just like,
that's exactly what
you want my autograph? And like, they're giving me this cap that's signed by like F1 drivers. Yeah. And I'm like, okay, it's Matt. It's like insane. It was really weird. And I remember you coming up to me like, we're in Azerbaijan, and there's these kids like going crazy for WTF1. It's awesome. It's so cool.
And I think a lot of people maybe, and it's probably just because of the way it is, but like WTF1 as a brand, you know, it kind of, that's what a lot of people see. They see me on camera and whatever, and they don't really just realise that maybe if you were to strip it all back, that we're just F1 fans that are so passionate about the sport and we want to share whatever our opinions and whatnot. And I think it's probably quite
Yeah, that's what it's always been, like from day one. And that's why like you guys doing it is so great as well, because we're all F1 fans. Mm. Like the whole point of me like writing it on those Tumblr things was, it's not written like an essay or a press release. Mm-hmm. It's written like, I'm the nerdy F1 fan like you that's kid head to toe in merchandise and waving a flag at races.
Mm-hmm. And this is my
take on it.
Yeah.
Whereas a lot of people may be hired to write about Formula One that maybe aren't as big of a fan as we are, and maybe that's sometimes when we get in trouble, when we're almost too passionate about things or too opinionated. But that's what we are. We're F1 fans, and that's kind of where we'll always be.
Isn't there a question on there about, does it kind of working in F1, does it spoil?
Yes. Here we go. Right. Okay. I found it. Does from Chris O'Brien, Brian, does watching motorsport for your job change how you view motorsport?
I guess inevitably, yes. I think just because you've gone from a complete outsider position and watching F1 and only seeing, you know, what the media puts out or what you see from the TV coverage or, you know, social media obviously gives you a much more of an insight. But I think when you work behind the scenes, you're obviously getting fed new information. I don't think it's not made me hate or love it any. Actually, to be honest, I probably love it more. Mm. Just because you understand the way things are or why they are. But I think undoubtedly it changes it slightly, but not your enjoyment. Like, I still want to sit down and watch every single race, regardless of how much F1 stuff or how tired or however. Like,
it's changed it for me a lot, because obviously I would be essentially I'm working all through the races, so I'll be tweeting, and obviously anything that happens as well. So say like when Daniel Ricciardo announced that he was going to Renault that day in the office, if I was a fan, we'd be, you know, I'd be messaging my friends going, oh my God, that's absolutely crazy. But obviously us in the office were like, right, we need content on this.
Yeah.
Let's work this out. How are we going to do what we do? What are we going to do for the social posts? What are we going to do for a YouTube video?
Yeah.
And you're kind of in work mode as well. But like you say, it's not made me love it any less. And especially going to events and stuff, it's still like, even just going to an event where there's F1 cars, it's just like, this is so cool.
Yeah, I mean, the access is amazing, and you know, I wouldn't change that for the world. But it has changed again for me. Like, internet's best reactions is on my mind when things are happening. I'm always on social media, kind of looking up to watch the race, and then be like, okay, nothing's much happening, let's see if there's another funny tweet. So for me, it has changed, obviously, from just sitting there relaxed and whatnot. But this is the stuff you put in to get the rewards of being able to go to races and whatnot. So mm-hmm. So yeah, I mean, it's changed it, but not for a good or bad way. It's just different, isn't it?
Yeah.
So okay, let's
we're still just nutty about F1.
Oh, we're absolutely it's absolutely fine by me. Let's do some quick oh no, actually, you wanted to do, was it Jack Aitken? Yes, let's mention Jack Aitken. Maxito_C, how did your partnership / sponsorship of Jack Aitken come about?
I worked with one of Jack's friends, James, and when it was still very early on, I think 2013, maybe early 2013, yeah. And I asked James, I was like, oh, I'd like a racing driver to blog for the site. It'd be really interesting to get an insight of what it's like to be a junior driver.
Yeah.
Do you have anyone? Like, because he was doing social media for a few different drivers. And he said, well, how about this guy? And I was like, is he good? And he was like, yeah. And then about 5 months later, he won the Euro Cup Championship and the Formula Renault Championship. And that's when we started putting stickers on the car and stuff. And then, like you say, yeah, he's worked his way up to be Renault reserve driver, which is insane. Again, like, it's kind of cool that his story is kind of
growing
followed with us, like,
yeah,
it's really cool. So yeah, it was awesome.
Good guy, Jack Aitken, a man that's been on the podcast a few times since we launched it. This one's to you as well, Tommy. Kids love F1. Who came up with That's Radeon, actually?
Yeah, we got a lot of that. We got a lot of those questions. Again, it's a really early. I think I only saw two people when we released that video that was like, only OG fans remember this joke and stuff, because while it was very much like the modern WTF1, it's also a bit of a throwback as well.
Yeah.
So every time I'd post something, particularly on Facebook, no offense to Facebook, people would kind of nitpick with technicalities of things, and especially with the Eau Rouge Radeon thing. I just want to say as well, like, the thing in the video is obviously a character. That's not how I am as a person, like, nitpicking every little thing.
Nah, it's you, not
because every time we'd post something, and obviously I'm there thinking Eau Rouge, people will know Eau Rouge. Mm-hmm. So I'll write Eau Rouge even if it's Radeon. And you'll get a few comments like, oh, that bit's Radeon, and people would start having a conversation about it. So that kind of happened, and it was the same. I got to drive Danica Patrick's stock car, which is an ass car, but when I obviously naturally I don't think of stock car, I don't see a stock car as an ass car. I just said I've driven an ass car.
Yeah,
and everyone's like, well, you've not driven a NASCAR, because that's like,
again?
Yeah, it's like, that's saying like you drove an FIA. That's the governing body of stock car racing. But obviously I wrote NASCAR because like people will understand what I mean,
yeah.
But
yeah,
there was always that little audience. So then obviously when we did Girl the Grandstand, I think we'd made a few jokes on it recently, and you were just like, I want you to be that guy.
Yeah.
Here's the pointer. Do it. So yeah, obviously we had no idea that video was going to be quite so
instrumental
massive
in the education of where Eau Rouge and Radeon actually is. We'll see what the meme is for 2019. I think that was a question. What do we think the meme of 2019 will be?
If it's anything like Radeon, it's going to be like half made up 2 days before we go to shoot with no intention of anything blowing up.
This will be a terrible video. Blown the internet up.
Yeah.
Brilliant.
I mean, we almost didn't release that video.
Yeah, I heard there was internal discussions, wasn't there?
We almost didn't do it because we were like, oh no, like, is it funny enough? Is it does it look okay? Like, does it look a little like rough and ready? And then we just hit the live button and that was it. That was one of Rory's first shoots.
That was your first shoot, wasn't it, Rory?
It was.
Yeah.
So yeah, we were a bit like, oh, this Rory guy's a bit shit. So maybe we won't go live. But then we made the call because it was just so, like, I found myself watching it over and over and over again.
Yeah.
That we just like hit the live button and then the rest is history.
Oh, I love that.
The editing brought it back.
The editing. No, yeah.
Rory.
The on-screen personalities did. Sorry, Rory.
I mean, I think the funniest thing behind that story as well is that that happened at the end of our WTF1 Grand Prix. We were all deliriously tired. Mm-hmm. We lost people. We didn't know where anyone was that took part. We thought people weren't gonna take part because we went, hey guys, if you want to be in Gorilla Grandstand, stick around. And then no one was there and we were like, oh my god, no one wants to be in our video. And you and I were running around like mad things around Buttermore Park going, who's gonna be in this video? And no one was there. And then we found out that they'd actually gone to the grandstand because we'd said Gorilla Grandstand, so they went to the grandstand. And then we had this flock of people emerge, so it was like we'd gone on an emotional roller coaster, yeah, of oh no, this video is not gonna, yeah, work, to oh my god, there's so there's many people here. And I was like ushering people in, and like Lando Norris was in the corner like probably wanting to go home but then dying in a heap on the floor. Like, it was just so, the backstory of that video is insane considering then what happened afterwards.
Yeah,
but I mean,
so many outtakes as well of us just trying to do that outro.
So, yeah,
it was like 20 minutes.
How'd you find it? Yep.
Quick answer is we have no idea what we're doing.
Yeah, basically, if we're delirious, that's when the viral videos will come.
Exactly, so that. We're just going to work you to the ground. You're not going to have any off time. Like,
it's fine by me. Cool. If it creates awesome. The content, that's great. look into the future very quickly before we get into a few quick fire random questions. Halvard Trigizet, what do you see? This is actually quite a funny message. What do you see the project of WTF1 becoming? Doth there sleepeth a fantasy of a new media takeover of the coverage of F1? Outrageously dreaming here, but maybe an end result being that when terrestrial television gets outdated, you could fetch a license and do coverage on a streaming platform. Shocked face. Or perhaps some of you harbour a secret wish of being one of the next generation F1 pundits. Where's WTF1 going?
I guess, you know, the sky's the limit. We're here to make sure that fans have a voice in F1, coming at it from a different perspective from a lot of other media sites, which equally have their place in F1. We think we have ours too. So, you know, if we can do more things and work closely with racing series like we already do already, like we've got amazing partnerships with World Rallycross and Formula E, to kind of like, our mission is to make motorsport accessible for everybody so that you don't have to have somebody as your gatekeeper into F1. You can just discover it for yourself and have the confidence to like it, because motorsport can be quite confusing and there's a lot of jargon and terminology, and that's where we want to be. So if that means that we can get to that level where we're, you know, you never know what's going to happen. There's been a lot of change in especially F1 in recent times. So, you know, we're always looking for how can we do this better? How can we be that voice for fans? And so that's what's going to keep driving us forward and keep us here. And, you know, we're always looking for input from our fans about what they want so that we can then go out into the world and kind of try and make it happen. We had an incredible year last year. I seriously look back on it and I'm like, how did we really do all this? but, you know, each year just looks like it's going to get better and better. And if we can produce the best content for the fans, then mission accomplished.
It's funny you mention about like helping people discover F1, because a lot of people wanted to know how we got into F1. And I'm assuming it's all the same. It's just like my family.
Yeah. I grew up in Brixworth as well, which is just north of Northampton, which is where they produce the high performance powertrains for now Mercedes, but it used to be Ilmor Engineering that did like mainly McLaren. So everyone in my village was either working in F1 or around F1. So I was lucky that it was inevitable almost. And luckily my family liked it as well. But we were just saying, like, there's not many stories where somebody hasn't introduced you in some way.
I just saw an advert for an F1 race, and then me and my mum and dad started watching it, and then literally we were just hooked ever since.
Yeah.
Yeah, my dad was, still is, really into F1, and I was just plonked in front of the TV at 3 years old, and that was it, you know, Shumi for life.
I knew you were going to get that in somewhere. Yeah,
I was saying actually about to you the other day that I should probably shout out to my dad as well, because me and my dad were the people that if you see at the end of races, I was telling you about this, when that guy's carrying the DRS sign and leaving the circuit, that was basically me and my dad, like,
stealing
going to F1 races and seeing what goodies we could get. So, like, the best one we ever got was, should probably cut this if it's borderline criminal activity, but you know the signs above the pit lanes?
Yeah.
So I've got Jos Verstappen's pit sign from Monaco. When me and my dad went to the first race we ever went to.
Your first race was Monaco?
Well, yeah, so we went to Silverstone. Right, we went to Silverstone for like practice sessions because they were like £5 and they were like, let's do it.
Not exactly.
So it was like, well, let's go to Monaco rather than, because we did it really
as
cheap.
You do.
Well, it was really cheap.
That's the next thing
The tickets
back
were.
Back then, I imagine it was
general admission. Thursday was free.
Really?
Yeah, Thursday was free.
That's cool.
And yeah, we went to this race and. It was the old pit lane where you could essentially be in the pit lane because it was just you walk the track afterwards because it's public streets.
Yeah.
And I remember my dad just asking an Arrows mechanic, because we were massive Orange Arrows fans, which is why the logo is black and orange. So there's a fact for you.
So secretly WTF1 is Arrows.
Arrows. Aligned. Yeah. So yeah, my dad just said, like, can we have that sign? And an Arrows mechanic was like, I'm not going to stop you. I don't know who it belongs to.
If I look over here and it's gone, I won't say anything.
That sounds like permission
basically
to me.
That.
Yeah, that's permission.
So many people did the same thing, but so that
nowadays,
my dad was
I
trying
think
to
you'd probably get assassinated.
Yes. Yeah. Well, we walked past so many people with that sign, but I remember going in, and this is another fate moment, right? My dad's trying to get the sign off, and he needed like a screwdriver or something because it was screwed onto the wall.
And so you're literally tearing down
this gap.
You're helping.
So everyone was packing up and stuff, and my dad was like, "Tom, go find like something. We need something to like unscrew this sign." So I walked into the Minardi garage, right? Which was this sounds so made up. Which was like a shed. Like this is like the old pit lane. So like the back marker's got a shed, pretty much. And the only thing that was in there was a knife, like a butter knife.
Yeah.
So I was like, that's weird.
That'll do.
That's the only thing in the garage. Got it.
Yeah, so no screwdrivers, no
nothing. Like, they'd packed up everything apart from this knife. So it was like, that's meant to be. Take this, unscrew, get home. Verstappen sign on my wall in my bedroom.
Wow. Nice.
Yeah. So sorry, Monaco police.
Did you return the butter knife? That's what I want to know. Jeez.
Or did you leave it in the Arrows garage?
Yeah, I sent a letter to Minardi.
You left. You put them out of business, didn't you?
I know you really need this butter knife back, so here you go.
I triggered Toro Rosso. There you go.
All right, well, there you go. The founder of WTF1 is a thief. So if you want a criminal prosecution, you've got a witness statement right there.
Please don't go stealing all the signs from F1 races now.
Please don't. To be fair, there's a lot more security nowadays.
Yeah, you wouldn't be able to do it now.
Right, some quick fire random questions then. Nixo13, do you watch F1 with shoes on?
No.
But if I'm in my house, no.
Not an animal.
Who wears shoes inside?
Nixo13, apparently. Strange question.
You.
But this is 82. There's loads of Zs. That's why I did it. What's better in Formula One now comparing to 10 years ago? A lot of people don't like DRS or hybrid, but what do you think has improved? Just as a quick, what's improved?
There's a lot improved.
The coverage. I think the coverage is better.
Yeah, I think it's definitely more open and towards like helping people understand what's going on.
I think the problem is it's so easy to look back on 10 years and just see highlight reels and
exactly.
go...
Exactly. The
golden days. Especially like you grew up in
the
Schumacher era, probably loving it because he was winning everything.
Oh,
but
God, I loved it.
Well, that, not 10 years ago.
That era as a...
10 years ago was 2009.
Oh, God, it was.
Yeah. Oh,
going Schumacher. That's Schumacher. Try 20 years.
But say we go 15 years back. Everyone during that era was like, this is the most boring era. The same driver's winning all the time and stuff. Now people look back on the era and they're like, listen to the V10s, they're amazing.
Yeah, the good old days.
The same thing will happen.
Yeah,
people in 15, 10 years' time, they'll go, remember when Hamilton and Vettel were fighting five titles. They were the real legends, not these guys. Like, there'll be new drivers and people will be like, think, oh, they're nothing like Lewis. And
every era has given us something different and something I think to be excited about. And even though there are changes, like, it's just the evolution of F1, and that's not a bad thing. Like, yeah, they're quieter, but
it doesn't bother me anyway.
It's not, that's not affecting the racing. Exactly. It might affect the spectacle, but then there's so many other things that add to the spectacle nowadays that we didn't have 10 years ago. So I don't ever look back and go, oh, I wish we had this now, or, you know, all I want is, you know, good racing, drivers that have got massive potential being given that opportunity to kind of stretch their legs and do amazing races and have the accessibility to be able to go and see racing.
People moan about pay drivers as well, and I know we're going about like Stroll and all these people, but
they still have to race the car.
Yeah, and in the 90s they were literally like, they got like people in that were just like, oh, my dad owns a business, do you want to drive this
car?
His millions of pounds of cigarettes.
It just wasn't
money.
A thing back then, so it wasn't reported on, whereas now it's like, okay.
Okay, thanks, Rory, for telling us we've been going 1 hour 10. Okay, a couple more questions. Ibrahim Bachara, if you could choose any racing number, what would it be? Mine would be 7.
Mine would be 6 or 21, just because they're lucky numbers.
You're going to take the piss out of me for this, but when I used to race online, my number was 33, and that's Verstappen's number, and it was purely coincidental, I'll have you know.
Okay this so one we wanted to cover... well, two, actually, and then we'll finish. Josh Holland says, tips for journalists pursuing a career in F1.
I would actually say don't specialise in the written word, just purely because today's day and age, you need to be like multimedia talented. So whilst writing is massively important and it still adds to, you know, Tommy's background is in writing and kind of journalism, but he still writes a lot of the scripts for the videos that we produce. So I would say master your skills in writing, absolutely, but also learn about video and multimedia and apply that to that and start generating a portfolio, because ultimately, you know, whenever we're hiring, as much as like it's great to see your qualifications and it's great to see like what you've done, I want to see physical evidence of what you've done. Just like we said, like when we approached you, we could see immediately what you were producing. With Rory, like we asked him for a show reel and we wanted to see, and then we took him on a test shoot so that we could see like what he was doing. So definitely work your portfolio up and network. It's who you know, not what you know, that will get you a job in this industry. So start talking to people, go on LinkedIn, find people that have the job you want and ask them, you know, is there anything going at your place? Don't be afraid to ask that, because if you don't ask, you don't get. And secondly, find out what they had to do to get to where they are and any advice they've got for you to kind of do the same, essentially.
Smash, bang, wallop. Okay, and finally, you wanted to address this, Jess, from Freya33. Do you feel there aren't that many women in motorsport because of the stereotype around it being male-dominated?
Yeah, ending on a bit of a controversial one.
I know, controversy.
So first and foremost, don't label yourself as a woman in motorsport. There's a lot of stuff at the moment talking about women in this. You know, the W series is one of those things that's kind of hit a nerve for a lot of people. But I would say, look at yourself as an individual, male, female, whatever you are, and don't label yourself. Just think, you know, am I skilled enough to be doing the job that is being advertised or is available in motorsport? And go for it. Don't let labels hold you back. I've never looked at myself and gone, I'm a woman in motorsport. Like, I'm just Jess. And I happen to be in this job and it happens to be a motorsport and I hope I'm doing an all right job. But that I'd say, like, first and foremost, like, don't apply labels, because you're already like setting yourself up for a fall.
Well, there you go. Not as controversial, maybe, as very well said. In a way, it's positive.
Thanks.
Inspirational. That person and any other females out there will be feeling much better now. Okay. Well, thank you so much, everyone, for watching this Ask Us Anything podcast. We've talked about ourselves for an hour and 15, which is impressive.
I mean, easily done. Yeah. Sorry if we bored you.
Could have gone 4 hours. No.
But my stomach's starting to rumble. So yeah. I was really scared that it was going to start getting picked up by the mics. I really need to go eat something.
And then we'd hear it. Spasm.
I actually had a massage yesterday. I had a massage yesterday and the therapist, her stomach was rumbling through the entire 40-minute massage. And there was a point where I was going to go, love, go eat a Kit Kat or something. Like, literally just
and
go
eat something.
And you
didn't want to be that person.
I don't want to be that person. So it's a good job we're ending.
Okay, so Jess is going to get back
can
to
I just, oh, can on. I just have one final thing?
Oh, no.
So during that podcast, I had to itch my ear. Have you taken your headphone off yet?
No.
It's the weirdest. Just do it now, won't you?
Yeah, so, ooh.
Oh.
It's weird, isn't it?
Oh, thanks. No one else is going to feel that sensation. But
just won't see your reaction.
Thank you so much for watching this Ask Us Anything podcast. Let us know if there's any other questions that we haven't, you know, answered, and we'll do a few in the comments when this goes up. So,
Rory will look forward to our 4-hour special.
Thanks,
Rory's
Rory.
Loving life. Rory's enjoyed this whole podcast. I'm Matt. He's Tommy. She's Jess.
Hi.
And we're WDF1. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
League's Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning League's Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting 3 matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the Crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. League's Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.